Let's go around the NFL in the loop style.
Why are you smiling?
Because I love football.
Brought to you by Quick Assist. Here's John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
I'm going to tell you all about how much fun you're going to have this season.
On Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
I do appreciate that you guys really buy in when we go to the question of the day. We were talking about the idea of how you handle a bad loss. And some of y'all are just well-adjusted. I appreciate you. Somebody was like, I haven't let bad losses affect me for quite a while. They said after the 19 World Series and after Bill O'Brien lost the Chiefs up 24 points, they're like, I'm done letting those affect me. I'm like, good God, I'm glad you got to that place. Somebody else is like, I go read a book.
Yeah.
Another person was like, I go watch the brisket cook. Like, God bless you folks finding the ways to handle it.
Had one say, I have angry fun time with my girl.
God bless. Hey, man, if that's available to you, get you some endorphins. Get your rocks off, all that, man.
Yeah, yeah.
So, God bless you. God bless you all. Hope that you're handling a 34-7 loss to the Vikings well. But let's go around the NFL here, which is brought to you by Quick Assist, your no-hassle solution, reselling your tickets across every marketplace. Download Quick Assist from your app store today. Q-U-I-C-K-S-Y-S-T. That's Quick Assist, your tickets everywhere. All right, man. Over the course of the weekend, we got some interesting news, but... let's start with what ultimately happened with the Panthers, because they decided to make that shift last week, and there was a lot of talk about it and consternation and, you know, hand wringing and all of that. But Andy Dalton, 36-year-old Andy Dalton, the pride of Katy, Texas, got his opportunity to take the helm for the Panthers, and they got a pretty big win against Las Vegas Raiders team that I'm not gonna lie, I don't view them to be all that good. However, I didn't think that it was a 36-22 type thing if you put Andy Dalton in there. And I think the more important thing, as opposed to like that score, Andy Dalton, 26-37 for 319 yards and 3 touchdowns. He is the only quarterback to have 300 yards and 3 touchdowns this season. Period. Right? Like, he is the only one. So there you go. Andy Dalton, by some metrics, best quarterback in the league.
Well, I mean, look, man, some of our longtime listeners will go back to a time when I thought Andy Dalton, I never said he was great or elite, but was very good, and it became kind of a running thing on this show. But he also showed not just that he can still dial that up, but how bad Bryce Young was. Like, this, look, the Raiders, I'm with you, even though, don't ask me how I know this, you know, it might have been a week to pick the Raiders in a survivor pool and get eliminated in week 3. But, look, he got it done and showed exactly what this team is capable of. And Bryce Young had never done that. It just made it look even better for him and worse for Bryce.
Yeah, and I mean, it really is hard to not take everything that is said about Andy Dalton or about this particular win for the Panthers and not then look over at Bryce Young and be like, right? Deontay Johnson, who in his own right had a fantastic day, and I imagine he was very happy about that. 14 targets, 8 receptions for 122 yards and a touchdown for that wide receiver. He said that Andy Dalton provided, quote, a vet presence. Just having a quarterback there to get us in position, score, execute plays. We just did a great job of staying locked in. Every play called, we made the most of it. And again, you look over at Bryce Young, and he's like, huh, okay,
yeah,
so you just,
exactly.
you couldn't get them in position, you couldn't execute plays, and that's got to be a tough place, because Bryce Young, he's handled this all about as well as you possibly could expect them to. It's just the play has been so bad comparatively.
And I'm going to bring this back to the Texans quickly here, because you know what else that was? They benched the number one overall pick 2 games into the season. They made the call.
Uh-oh.
And it was a message to the entire team.
He's looking at you, 78.
Yeah, I am, absolutely. That's why I want to go back to that. And we'll revisit it. This is around the NFL, but I'm saying that's the kind of thing that can happen. It can sort of rally the teams. It can put them all on notice. Hey, everyone is short-term if they don't get the job done.
Somebody said 281 Panthers coaches save their jobs, show they can coach. Yeah, man, I saw a video of Dave Canales getting into the locker room, and he was high.
Yes, he was
high. In fact, they stuck the game ball in his chest, saying, hey, man, you got it done. And I was just like watching that whole scene as he's listing off all the accomplishments of dudes and talking about them, you know, getting the job done and the standard being the standard. I'm just like, who has the camera on wherever Bryce Young is in the locker room at this moment, right? Like, and I'm glad that they didn't put it on him because he didn't deserve that. However, everything that the Panthers do is going to be filtered through the lens of, huh, all
right,
Bryce.
He got to get traded, though, right?
I don't know. Not during the season. But
No, they ain't going to trade him this season. But next year is definitely going to be a – if they're a bad team and they got, like, a top three pick – they got to be thinking about a quarterback.
It's possible.
Yeah.
Speaking of accountability on the other side of that game, the Las Vegas Raiders had a 36-22 loss to the Carolina Panthers. Mm-hmm. Antonio Pierce, once an interim, now officially the head coach of that team, apparently was sending shots to his team, right? When you talk about accountability, he was doing that. He said, quote, as the game went on, I think there was definitely some individuals that made business decisions, and we'll make business decisions going forward as well. Do you like this from a head coach?
Huh. Love it. I mean, think about what
he
I've just
sound
been...
like he played in the league at one
yes,
point,
he
right?
did. He sure did.
Yes, it does. And that's exactly what you want to hear from your head coach. And he's talking about Davante Adams, right?
I mean, it's possible.
What was the business decision?
I mean, Davante Adams...
I want to see the play.
Yeah, when asked about that, he said, I feel like I don't know that it's tough for me to identify that. When he said, I'm not sure. Just when Pierce's comments of... players making business decisions came up. So sounds like they have a great relationship when it comes to your star wide receiver and the head coach. I'm interested to see how the Raiders do, because I always am wary of the what I believe to be oftentimes a mistake of making the interim the head coach.
Yeah,
they went
agree.
Ahead and did that, and it was Pierce came in with all the energy. He was kind of the beloved guy by the players, but as of right now, you have quotes like that coming in week three. Like, you do wonder if that relationship or if that feeling of the vibes isn't there. I know that he's a defensive guy. Is that going to be enough to carry this thing?
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm not just the interim thing. I'm in lockstep with you. I think in today's NFL, offensive minded guys have been much more successful. But I like what he said there, and I think he was talking to specific players, and they know who they are.
So as we continue around the NFL, a few comebacks happened in the course of this week, but I don't know if there was one that was more surprising to me than the injury bowl that we seem to be watching between the Niners and the Los Angeles Rams. At one point, the Niners were handling up their business, and I was like, all right, I don't have to watch this anymore. Nope, the Rams made their way all the way back to the point where Sean McVay entered his post-game availability like this.
All right, holy.
Yeah.
No, that was what a job by our group. Just continuing to battle, continuing to fight. And, you know, there's a lot of guts. There's a lot of resilience in this group. And it's just one game. But I'm really proud of them.
That game was out of control, it looked like. But it was one of those, like you and I were talking during a break. Even as bad as the Texans were at 14-0, I was sitting there going, well, maybe if something happens, you know, whatever. That game, it did happen.
14-0.
Yeah, that
right?
game, it did happen. And the Rams all of a sudden took advantage of it.
They were down 14 in the second half, especially, and the Rams were able to come back and win. I mean, one of the interesting things is I thought that maybe the most dynamic player in this game was Juwan Jennings for the Niners. He had quite a few incredible catches, 175 yards, 3 touchdowns in a loss. Like, I imagine that's got to be one of those things where you walk into the locker room and maybe you don't say it out loud, but in your mind you go, I ain't lose, y'all lost. You know what I mean? Like, 175 and 3 touchdowns, I did my part.
Yeah. What's the matter with you guys?
Right. But I found that to be amazing because, I mean, like, you had so many injuries in the course of this. The Rams did not have Nacua, did not have Cooper Kupp, as the Niners also had quite a few players missing. But still, the Niners now find themselves 1-2 along with those Los Angeles Rams. And I can maybe see and understand why the Rams had a tough season thus far. The Niners, one of those teams that we looked at as maybe one of the few teams that we felt confident about being a good football team headed in. And I think it points again to the idea that I've kind of developed, which is I don't think there's an elite team in the NFL as right now.
I'm telling you, man. Niners are 1-2. Ravens are 1-2. Dolphins are 1-2. It's just all across where some teams are either underperforming or Cowboys are 1-2. They're underperforming or just this league is just there's no elite team.
Yeah. And so I'm just amazed by that particular one. And so was Sean McVay, a dude who's usually like relatively chill, came into his press conference just cussing up a storm to start this thing up. All right. As we continue around the NFL, a team that I know is not elite, but a player that very well might be, Malik Nabers.
Ooh.
I mean, early on, it's been very apparent. At first game, they didn't really learn their lesson, but after that, they figured out what it is, which is get the ball to that guy. As he became the first player in league history to record, get this, 20 receptions, 250 receiving yards, and three or more touchdown catches in their first three games. He's had, in this game that they played this weekend, 8 receptions on 12 targets, 78 yards, 2 touchdowns, and that's on a team that is quarterbacked by Daniel Jones.
And just mossing guys. Like some of the catches he makes are not just like, oh, he had some good numbers. It's like, oh, no, very few people can do what he's doing. It's going to be, he's exactly what we thought he was going to be.
Yeah.
And maybe more.
Yeah, man. He has been incredible, continuing the lineage of incredible wide receivers out of LSU. But yeah, the Giants ultimately getting a 21-15 victory over the Cleveland Browns, where Deshaun Watson actually tossed the ball around a little bit, but he did not do it for a very good average, 5.3 yards per attempt. Did have a couple of touchdowns. It does feel like everything that the Browns do now offensively is, can we manage Deshaun Watson, which is not the way you want to go with a $230 million quarterback.
Yeah.
8 sacks. Was it 8?
I think it was
8 sacks.
8 sacks, yeah. 48 yards.
Yeah.
I know it was 7 very early.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that offensive line is bad. The quarterback is bad.
He's a mess.
Man.
He is an absolute mess.
And that's with him throwing a couple touchdowns, right? Like, well,
but you say that. I'm sorry, but you say that, but I think his season yards per attempt is like real low.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
real low.
He's not useful as like a quarterback that can really sit there and run an offense to real effect. Honestly, his best usage, the best way he's been utilized during the course of this very early season is by sitting back there and then scrambling. Like, then doing the scramble drill, changing the numbers where now you're having to defend 11 as opposed to 10 and using his legs. That's really been the best of it, and that's not sustainable. So, yeah, best of luck to the Browns, who are dealing with, I mean, somebody that is very clearly damaged goods.
He hasn't thrown for more than 5.5 yards per attempt in any game this year.
Gross. That is just...
That's awful.
Flat out.
Yeah, especially for what he's getting paid.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to hear those numbers if you're getting paid that much.
Mm-hmm.
Other things around the NFL. I found this one interesting. This was going to be... this was a very good game when it came to Eagles-Saints. And down in New Orleans, that was just a tough, hard-fought game. It was interesting to see, especially because the Saints had been, you know, moving the ball pretty well. Now, of course, I imagine that that's tough for those teams that they moved the ball against, because it was the Panthers who, okay.
Yeah.
But then it was also the Cowboys who, yeah, maybe not. Maybe that defense is kind of boo-boo. but then because they they came up against the Eagles, and the Eagles made a really, really tough on the Saints to move the ball. But ultimately, the Saints get the victory. And one of the things that was interesting about that is after the game, where Jalen Hurts had, you know, tough game, a couple of ugly turnovers, Jalen Carter, near the end of this game, was, like, seen on the sidelines, jawing at the defensive players, like Tyrann Mathieu and some of the other folks for the Saints, jawing at the, you know, various Saints fans in the stands, and also at one point seemed to be arguing with Nick Sirianni. And I still don't have a good insight into what got Jalen Carter going, but he was just mad. He had to be held back. You remember Big Dom over there?
Yeah.
Apparently this is his job, is to make sure that big old Jalen Carter don't hurt nobody. But yeah, he was out there yelling at folks, and I was like, I don't understand what's happening, but it's very evident that there's something is happening.
Big Dom was looking for a camera to get in front of. He does a lot of that. I don't feel like the Sirianni thing was really at him as much as like trying to
get him to calm down.
Yeah, just trying to yell. No, both sides were yelling and trying to make their point. But that was not the best look in the world for old Jalen.
Yeah, I still have no idea what exactly set him off, but he was jawing at everybody. And one of the things I found interesting is him being a defensive tackle jawing at the other defender. Like, usually you see those opposite teams. That butt heads is like an offensive player and a defensive player because they've been matching up.
Yeah.
I was like, what do those two dudes have to be yelling at each other about? But I guess ultimately they're going to be happy because the Eagles got out of there with a victory and maybe put a little damper on the idea of the Saints as incredible team. Although, look, good teams lose too. I want to make that clear that I understand that. But yeah, again, pointing to the idea that there might not be an elite team around the league, and from the 8-2, the Vikings could be elite. And you know what?
Hey, they've beaten the Niners and the Texans, and 3-0.
And made both of them look kind of bad in doing it,
yes,
too.
Yes, so. Exactly.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, you mentioned, the near miss with the Cowboys. I mean, that's a dead man walking right there at head coach, isn't it?
Oh, with Mike McCarthy?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's it.
In order for him to keep his job, they have to win in the playoffs, and that is not like a team.
They're not even getting to the playoffs at this point.
Even if they find some wins in the regular season, that's not a team that can win in the playoffs. Yeah. So that's very clear. Like, the defense wasn't good on any stretch, and then the offense, gross. Like, they have two dudes on offense, which is the quarterback and that one wide receiver, and maybe the tight end, right?
Yeah.
One more thing. Sam Darnold is apparently undergoing an MRI. You saw him during the course of the Texans game. Have to deal with that knee. Came out for one play in which Nick Mullins made his resurgence onto an NFL field to put the ball in a running back's gullet.
Yeah.
And then come out to allow Sam Darnold to return. Which, how interesting was it that Sam Darnold, a dude who was not anticipated to be the starter in this season, had a standing ovation after missing one play?
Oh, of course. It's very telling. And you know, we talked about it a little bit, but one thing about Sam Darnold that you don't realize, not only has he had this resurgence and this great game, he's really not old. He's not that old a guy. I want to say he's younger than Joe Burrow. If things are getting unlocked, it's in a good thing for him. And then the other thing I wanted to mention that was really, really interesting, and we'll get into this more when we look at the division. How about Malik Willis? How about Malik Willis with the team that drafted him and taking him to the woodshed? I mean, that was something.
Yeah, he didn't make too much of it, though. But that's around the NFL here in the Loop Sports Radio 610. Don't forget that it is brought to you by Quick Assist. Appreciate you hanging out with us after an unfortunate 34-7 drubbing of your Texans by the Minnesota Vikings on Sunday. Coming up next, this will be interesting. I have established as a little bit of a standard who hooped as an opportunity.
Wait,
to talk
what?
About. Yeah, who hooped, who played well for the Texans. Let's see if we can get that off the ground here today after was a very disappointing loss. Who hooped? Who actually showed well in a disappointing Texas loss? 713-572-4610. Let's do that next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610.
Right.
Here's In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
Jeremy Tunsil.
Yeah.
False start.
That was a false start on me. I will actually adjust and make sure I get better about that during the course of the show.
John
as it
Lopez,
is
Laramie Atitula.
Good God. Good God. Hey, man, y'all not paying me like Laramie Tunsil out here, though. That's one thing I'll tell you for sure. I know that for damn certain.
He rubbing off on everybody. Pause.
All right. Okay. Appreciate you guys rocking with us on a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday in the Loop. Figgy, John, myself, who apparently is Laramie Tunsil, hanging out with you. All right, let's try and see if we can do this. We got a text from the great Sean Pendergast, who is listening. Thank him. He said, this is the ultimate heat check, trying to find out who hooped after yesterday's 34-7 drubbing of the Minnesota Vikings. But you know what? We still going to see if we can do it.
Who are we?
Hooped in the course of this game? Like, who at least did their job? Who covered themselves with some level of glory in what was a very disappointing game all the way around? It wasn't just that they didn't get a chance to compete. Like, they didn't compete overall, right? And so there's a lot of things that did not happen well for your Texans, but we want to still find the people who deserve their salutes and give them to them, right? Is that fair?
We're looking. Actually, I shouldn't say the problem, but the weird thing to me about who hooped it today is, like, hooped to me means, like, you were really, like, you really showed up.
Like, oh, he hooped.
Oh,
yeah.
He hooped.
Like, right. Everybody out there playing basketball, but that guy over there hooped.
Right, exactly. No,
so
you're right.
Maybe just today, because, like, who was all right?
Who was solid? All right, so you know solid? What? I will throw up some possibles, and you guys let me know. Y'all might just be swatting these. I might go 0-for here.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try and see if I can get this over.
Yeah.
Can I interest you in a Tim Settle?
Oh, you know what? He might be the leader in the clubhouse.
Tim Settle hooped. Tim Settle, a couple of sacks from the middle of the defensive line. Like, I thought that was super important when it came to applying pressure to Sam Darnold. Like, that was going to be a thing that if you were able to get him to do, get into the lizard brain, as I like to call it when it came for quarterbacks, it was getting after him. Tim Settle absolutely got home a couple of times, which that is not something to be scoffed at in the NFL. You get a couple sacks in a game, you did something special.
No, and
so
it
I
want to
give Tim Settle his
credit. And it wasn't just garbage time stuff either. But no, I'll give you that one. Okay. I'll even give him a hooped.
Hey, congratulations, Tim Settle. You hooped.
Yeah.
In the course of that contest, I was actually just looking this up as I was looking for some of those defensive stats. Apparently, and I don't know if it just felt like it because of the course of the game, the game script, but when you remember that the defense actually held their own a decent amount, you just weren't putting up points. Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson Jr. Again, these guys on the edges, they hooped in some degree, or like seven pressures apiece.
Yeah,
which was tied for the second most on the week. I think the only person who had more pressures was what's my guy's name?
Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah, Jadeveon Clowney for the Panthers.
Yes, that Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah. That was the only dude with more pressures on the day. So like, I did want to give some credit because again, the pressures was going to be super important. Getting into Sam Darnold's kitchen was going to be super important in trying to make that if you were going to be successful. And you saw them at least at some points during this game. I think it was early second half. You saw them at least hold this this Vikings offense who seemed to be running away, running around like they was pot on this defense early on in this game. So I did want to give some credit to them. The hooped, no hooped, nah.
How do you feel about hooped when it comes to Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson? Because I think they were on the brink of it, but just like they were on the brink of making big plays. I mean, they had some sacks, but you know, like the pressures were very good, but they didn't really necessarily like finish the job. I think they were kind of in the neighborhood of hooping. In the neighborhood of hooping.
I appreciate all the fine folks who are giving me credit for pulling Tim Settle here. I'm holding that one up. I got one. All right, as we continue to see if we can find out who hooped or even got close to hooping in the course of that 34-7 loss against the Vikings. Somebody said moral victory Monday. I just want to make sure that at least we appreciate the people who played well. Like, we don't want to forget that situation. Somebody said, Reggie, what are you talking about? Nobody did their job. There were some people from the 832. They said, Mr. Consistency, John Weeks.
Every week.
And then somebody else said Tommy Townsend was getting that work in with them punts. That's probably not a good one. All right, hey, how about this one? Can I interest you in Cam Akers? I mean, look, RB1,
early. Can we just separate it? Like maybe first and early second quarter, he seemed to have a little bit of something going. And then the penalties and everything, you know, kind of dismantled
that. Right. And I mean, like, they weren't in a situation to be able to run the ball like that anyways. But like I mentioned, of the 11 design runs that the Texans had, 8 of them, there was contact with the ball carrier behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
And we saw some of what Cam Akers, what we saw in the preseason, some of the things that made us excited about him possibly being RB2 was that he went out there, he hit that spin button a couple of times on one of them plays. Like, he was able to take not blocked up great runs and, you know, get positive runs out of them. I thought that was beneficial.
I will say this. When I was putting together my passing thoughts watching this game, early, now I deleted this one ultimately, but and you'll hear him at noon. But early on, I did write down one of my passing thoughts. Cam Akers has a real knack for this blocking scheme.
He does.
He has a knack for it. So I'll give you that one. Not hooped, but
played well.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm still holding on to that Tim Settle hoop. That one is.
Yeah, that was good.
All right, 281. You with me. Can we get some love for British Brooks? Fullback British Brooks, right? Called into duty because obviously Brevin Jordan out for the rest of the season. And hate to see that happen. Your tight end room kind of shifted a little bit. So Cade Stover not in a situation to do as much of that fullback stuff.
Yeah.
British Brooks steps into that role and he laid the hammer a few times. Like, you absolutely saw him bring a level of aggression that was good. I'm not even putting forward like the idea of who, but I do want to appreciate British Brooks showing up and showing that he's capable of doing the fullback.
I think that's the way to do it. He was appreciated.
We in the sticks.
We
man.
Are in the sticks.
Try it. I'm trying, brother.
We are in the sticks.
I'm trying.
He didn't necessarily hoop, but you know, he knocked down a big shot. All right, you know.
Hey, we can start the fire.
Big Shot Bob type stuff?
He's a Big Shot Bob.
Hey, we can start the campfire with all these sticks around here, man.
All right, man. How about this one? Can I interest you in the best passer on the day for the Houston Texans?
Oh, here we go.
Stephon Diggs. Had a 118.8 passer rating because of that throw across the field. But no, outside of like the I guess funny part of this, Stephon Diggs was there as a wide receiver, got a whole bunch of targets, made sure to put up those yards in the course of this. Like, I thought that him being a target for this team, especially when you maybe he had a few drops in the course of it, like I thought that was useful for you. And it was good to see him get more active after having a week or a couple of weeks of not putting up a ton of yards.
We need to be fair here, because my first inclination was, I'm not going to say he hooped, but he had a very good game. But you know what? Because of the defensive game plan that they had on Nico Collins, and anytime you get double-digit receptions is off the charts.
10 receptions, 94 yards.
Yeah, so, and pretty good average there. I'll do it. I'll give you that one.
Hey!
Yeah, I'll give you that one. Yeah.
I mean, he was 1-for-1 with 13 yards, guys. Like somebody said, best passer on the day was the refs. Yeah, they were throwing that yellow flag all up and down that field, brother. Mm-hmm. They were getting height, getting distance.
They got to ice that shoulder up.
It wasn't Chiefs-like, though. The Texans earned every one of those.
Yeah, nope. They sure did. They sure did. That was my full complement of players that I was hoping to maybe see if I could get out here. I felt like I was playing spades and trying to walk some jacks. You know what I mean? Like, let me see if I can get this jack to walk right quick. This 10, can I get that to walk?
Yeah.
And what's tough is I don't think that means that you had dudes that were not capable of playing on this given day, talk less of over the course of the season. But I feel like, again, that points to the way that the game played out and the fact that you shot yourself in the foot a whole bunch put you in positions to not have guys play at their highest level. That was the thing that was most frustrating to me.
No, that was absolutely frustrating. We, and just to be clear for our listeners who maybe joined us a little later. We don't think anybody in a macro sense hooped. This is just like if you had to parse and you had to, you know, nitpick and find.
I don't know. You get two sacks.
Positive.
I feel like you hoop, man. I'm just letting you. I'm letting you cook on.
Sometimes
that.
It be days like that when you guys listen to the broadcast. Sometimes they had these sponsorships like the player of the game.
We got to find a way to get this in,
and we got the highlight of the game brought to you by this agency or whatever.
I'll tell you who hooped. For sure. Probably better than anybody we've listed already.
Okay.
Andre Ware.
Andre Ware got
Andre Ware hooped.
You got to. Hey, you want to let the people hear how Andre Ware reacted to. Was this the first of many Laramie Tunsil penalties in the course of this game?
I believe it was. He hooped.
Yeah, man. He let Laramie Tunsil have it.
As only Andre can. It was awesome, and of course we went in on that earlier today as well. You'll hear it again.
Yeah, you came out.
Here's the give, and they blow the play dead. Looks like a false start on the Texans. Let's find out who.
Before the snap, false start. Offense number 78. It's a 5-yard penalty. Still first.
Well, he got it out of the way early. Laramie Tunsil.
It's every week though. I mean, you're a Pro Bowl player. There's no excuse for that. None.
Back to the 15 we go.
That's hooping.
My favorite part is listening in the background of the music playing.
Yeah.
What was that? TNT.
My favorite was hearing Mark Vandermeer like, hey, we just got to keep going, bro. Like, at the end, he's like, all right.
Well, he got it out of the way early. Laramie Tunsil.
It's every week, though. I mean, you're a Pro Bowl player. There's no excuse for that. None.
Back to the 15 we go.
Back to the 15, right?
Back to the 15.
Mark was like, all righty then.
Yeah, we got to keep going. 713, the Texans need to have a sit down with Tunsil. They need to have a sit down, a lay down, a throw down, like all the downs. Like,
oh, you will hear us talking about Laramie Tunsil again.
That can't happen again. It simply can't.
I think you should bench him.
We were talking about this in the break, myself and Fig, because this is just, again.
True. The bit boss came in here to talk about it too.
Yeah.
I think that. The problem that I have with the possibility of benching him is you bench him to start the game, and let's say that the rookie, Blake Fisher, which is, I mean, it's a possibility, he comes out and doesn't look good. If you have to go back to Laramie Tunsil, does that then not undercut
leverage? He's got you by the you know what.
And I don't even know if it's all that, but like in the mentality of the player, is it possible that the player goes, see?
Right? No. Well, you know what? In this case, yes, it's possible. But first of all, I don't think that's going to happen. It could, but I don't think that's going to happen. And I just think the long-term benefit of making this statement, and not like, oh, we're going to sit you a series. No. He's taking Blake Fisher's taking reps every day starting Wednesday at practice. He's going to start the game. And then if something happens down the road where Laramie looks better and all that, then you start him or he earns his position back. But this is beyond the pale, man. I mean, this is beyond, oh, that's just Laramie, ha, ha, ha. No, he's a liability. And he needs to be a message. And again, I'll say this again. You know, what happened in Carolina when they benched after two games the number one overall pick? The quarterback. And by the way, you bench quarterbacks all the time. People call for the benching of high-priced quarterbacks all the time. Why can't it fit in this case with the highest-paid player on the team?
I mean, if it work out good, then nobody's complaining.
Right.
But we don't talk about it when it works out bad, where if you did bench him and then it just go completely south.
But sometimes it works out bad with quarterback. what I'm saying is, like, where's the, why is there this double standard? Oh, the quarterback. Look, I get it.
It doesn't always work out bad with the quarterback, or good with the quarterback.
That's what I'm saying. It's like sometimes it doesn't work out good with the quarterback.
Yeah, and we've seen places where they try to go back to that quarterback because it was worse than what it was before. And next thing you know, that coach is out of a job. And that locker room is completely messed up.
Nah, man. I'm adamant about
this.
Do you
feel like it's too early, though?
Was it too early for Bryce Young?
He was playing bad, though, man.
Laremy Tunsil is ending drives consistently.
Yeah, and it's the easy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is indeed the easy stuff.
He's ending drives. Like, they had 3rd and 4 in territory, you know, in Vikings territory. Next thing they know, they have 4 penalties in a row. Now, not all of them were his, and they're punting. He's ending scoring drives. That doesn't play, man. You're a professional football player, and you're the highest paid player on the team. By the way, you're a captain.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a leadership aspect of this. And again,
that's what make it tough for me to bench him right at this moment. Mm. I got to see him again. And like I said, second half, then I'm probably make a move. But it's tough. It's a tough position, man. Yeah.
There you go. It's In the Loop. Sports Radio 610. Thanks for hanging out with us. Even though the Reaction Monday brought to you by Shoppers is
it went
not,
from who's hooping to benching Titus. I mean, to Laremy Tunsil.
I mean, look, you benching more people on the offensive line. Look, he just benched Titus too. But I mean, that was a natural progression. If you're looking at who played well, very quickly you get to, oh, there's not a lot. Why is that? Because
that dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amongst others. But there you go. In the Loop, Sports Radio 610 coming up next. Let's talk about what's popping, including what could possibly be Justin Verlander's final start at Minute Maid Park. We'll talk about that more next.
The biggest stories in sports and entertainment. Sports Radio 610 style. In the Loop presents What's Poppin'.
All right, let's get into what's popping on this Reaction Monday here in Houston after a 34-7 loss by your Texans against the Minnesota Vikings. So how about we focus on something that is not the Texans? Let's talk about the Houston Astros.
Okay.
Is that fine? I wish I had more positive to talk about in that realm, but unfortunately, they let one slip yesterday. Had an opportunity to get a pretty good win and put them really, really, really close to finishing off the AL West and getting themselves officially booked for postseason baseball. They did not do that, however, as they lost 9-8, allowing the Angels to really keep coming back on them and ultimately walk them off, ultimately get a win at Minute Maid Park. And did you get a chance to see any of this game? I know that this was happening during NFL football.
Yeah, no, I just caught up with it afterward. Well, the very end, but I mostly caught up with it afterward. But implosion is the word.
That is the word they use?
that comes to my figgy.
4 runs in the 9th for the Angels.
Yeah, it was bad, man. It was kind of an up and down game a little bit. But once it got to the 9th inning and Josh Hader came out with his intro music, Fireman by Lil Wayne, I'm thinking like, all right, cool, it's over. Like, and he gave up the game pretty much. He blew the game.
He
didn't look good at all.
No.
4 runs earned on Josh Hader, only got 1 out. And I think one of the interesting things is wins and losses are kind of an antiquated stat in my mind when it comes to pitching. Like, I'm in that book, right? I know that some people think that that's nonsense, that ultimately that still matters.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it is interesting to look at the fact that Josh Hader has an 8-8 record,
yeah, right,
as a closer. That gives me a little bit of pause going into the postseason, knowing that he's got great stuff and all those things. But having that many losses on your docket when it comes down to it.
And his ERA is up there a little bit, man, especially for a high-priced closer like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And especially going into the postseason, you mentioned the magic number. It's down to 1. Well, they can get it done today with a win over the Mariners, put it that way. But that said, you were talking about teams like the Tigers and some other teams that, you know, have some momentum. Closers have momentum too going into the postseason, and it's got to be, you know, it's got to be kind of weighing on them at some point.
I don't have time for the momentum conversation right now. Eventually, we'll get to it, and I don't look forward to that day. But unfortunately, the Astros lose that game. But you did mention a good thing, which is the magic number has gotten down to 1. Just need to get a victory, likely during the course of this series here against the Mariners. And you will, you know, go ahead and book your ticket to the postseason. Mm-hmm. And at this point, it's looking like it might be against the Tigers, who have fully grabbed hold of that third AL wild card spot as of right now. And so shout out to the Fighting AJ Hinches, who just stormed them their ways into this thing and knocked some things around, right? Mm-hmm. Broke some stuff. And now they're in that conversation. That's going to be a tough one to look at. What was also tough to look at was Saturday's baseball game with your Astros, where Justin Verlander may possibly have pitched his final game at Minute Maid Park. It looked like it was going to be a lot better of a situation early. And then for him, he started giving up a whole bunch of runs, which was rough to see, and maybe put the final nail in the possibility of him being on that postseason roster when it comes time for that to happen.
And I thought he handled it well. I think he understands what the situation is. Like, if you're talking about performance, then the performance just hasn't been there. But what a wild story that would be if Verlander does not make the roster for the postseason. That would be incredible for the Astros, incredible to watch, and kind of hard to believe that we reached a point where Justin Verlander doesn't make the roster.
Sorry, I misspoke. Magic number is two. However,
but they can win.
They would win it if they, I believe, if they got a win, because it would be a win and a loss.
Yeah,
a win for the Texans, a loss for the Mariners, and that would ultimately get it done. I appreciate you, A32, cleaning that up for me. But yeah, man, Friday was a little rough, although I did appreciate seeing the Minute Maid Park gave Verlander that love. It was very, very cognizant of the fact of the magnitude of the situation for him. And Justin Verlander also spoke to that a little bit. I don't know if we have the audio there. You do? if you could, I'd appreciate that.
It meant a lot. It really did. Yeah. That was honestly pretty special to me. You know how these fans know the game, they pay attention, they know I'm out there grinding and, you know, trying to give everything I can. You know, I've worked as hard as humanly possible, you know, trying to bounce back as quick as I can from the injury and get back out there. And, you know, for them to have that ovation after such a difficult day, yeah, it touched me. It did.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it plays out, because, frankly, if you talk, I mean, he deserves to be on the postseason roster as Justin Verlander. He doesn't deserve it as how things are stacking up right now, you know, with this squad.
Yordan Alvarez, and look, I forgot to mention this.
Oh, wow. Let's not bury that lead.
Yeah, my bad, y'all. I was so caught up in other things that, yeah, man, the thing that actually could really impact this Astros team in a big way, Yordan Alvarez, when he was sliding into second yesterday, seemed to come up and have a little bit of a knee injury, and it looked like a pretty regular slide as it happened. However, he did leave the game with that knee injury in the third inning, and that is a problem, right? If he continues to have that issue, Joe Espada said Yordan is not great. That's not what you want right now, but we've just got to get ready for obviously today's game against the Mariners. However, you didn't have to keep going. Like, my attention span stopped when you said Yordan is not great.
Yeah. But it's just a contusion, right? Isn't that what they said after the game?
Yeah, the first thought is that is a contusion, which that is not.
Dodge the bullet there, baby.
What is the pipeline again? Contusion to what? Fracture? That's what we've been working on recently, which that'd be a terrible thing because, John, you've made this mention a few times. This team without Yordan Alvarez is probably a non-starter.
No, I said it last year, and certainly this year is the same. You don't win anything without Yordan. We all know what Bregman and Altuve and everybody and is and how clutch they are, but in terms of just a series of 5, 6, 7 games, you have to have Yordan or you don't win.
Yeah, don't forget that he underwent arthroscopic surgery on both of his knees in August of 2020, so I think that adds a little bit of concern to what is happening here, but we'll see if we get more information on him and how he feels going further. But yeah, that's going to be definitely a space to watch in the course of this. And a couple of things of note that happened this weekend. Tonight, going into this game versus the Mariners, this is the last outing for the Astros Space City the City Connect uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
So before they get a new version for next season, I guess. But yeah, if you have some level of appreciation for that, know that tonight's the last time you get to see them on those Astros players. And then also, Chicago White Sox did it. They tied yesterday the post 1900 MLB record for most losses, 120 losses, which was previously accomplished by the 1962 Mets. That was the expansion.
How do you even get to that number? Like, you have to try to be bad and try to lose games, you would think. 120.
That's a lot of ills, man.
Oh, man. I mean, I guess you can recover. You know, the Astros lost 100 games 3 years in a row. But recovering from 120, hell, the Mets did. You know, you talk about the 62 Mets. You know, they ended up winning the World Series in 69. So, nice. you know, it's a tough road, though.
Yeah. So, shout out to the White Sox. And then also, apparently, per Bob Nightingale, the MLB and the Oakland A's, as they're getting ready to have their final game at Oakland Coliseum later this week, Thursday, in fact. They're beefing up security for that game because they're afraid the fans are going to, I don't know, do something crazy.
Oh, they will. No, absolutely, because they're angry.
Those fans have been peacefully protesting at that stadium for years now. They're not about to burn
us. Okay, what's the name of the city?
Oakland?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Wow. ISO.
What's the name of that city?
That's crazy.
I think the biggest reason, not just because it's Oakland, that was just a fun line to drop there, but they're mad at this organization. Like, they have been, you know, protesting, as you said, and signs and sell the team and all that, but they are angry at this team,
correct,
at this organization, and they're going to get their last piece of the Coliseum any way they can.
All right, Baseball Talk is brought to you, or is presented rather, by T-Mobile. Head to T-Mobile.com and get a great deal on the iPhone 16 Pro. All right, coming up next, let's get back to what was an embarrassing and disappointing loss to the Vikings, 34-7, here on this Reaction Monday. And let's get the OG's passing thoughts. We'll do that next.